Well, thank you. I think that's the most wonderful introduction I've ever had in my life. So before I get going, I just want to say I put some handouts over on the table, some information about Hospice of Santa Barbara. There's a little flyer that tells you the difference between the different hospices in town. We're unique in this country. We're a non-medical hospice, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. All the information is over there. There's some information about our program, so please pick up some of the flyers. Also, what I'd like to say is in our education series, we have something called Learn at Lunch, and our next speaker is Paul Hansma, who's going to be talking about pain. That's something most people are worried about as they come closer. And also, I want to let you know that Joan Halifax from UPIAH will be here on February 27th. These are all free events that we offer the community. So there's some save the date up there, so please take that information. So dying is part of existence from the beginning of time. I don't have to tell you that. I imagine a scene at the beginning of human history, maybe a savanna. A group of people gathered around a burial site, weeping over the body of a loved one. Perhaps the tears came from feeling love, which must have filled the human heart for thousands of years. People of every kind lie together in the same soil. We are all equal as we stand with tears in our eyes before a grave, and as we ask, "Where have you gone?" In War and Peace, Leo Tolstoy wrote, "Everything that I understand only because I love. Everything is united by it alone. Love is God, and to die means that I, a particle of love, shall return to the general and eternal source." You know, the mystery of life and death are one. They cannot be separated. Death is not an anomaly, it's not a medical condition or a pathology, it's simply a part of life. And although it is inevitable, death and grief aren't things we talk about much in the West. We don't even say the word death. We say passed away, deceased, checked out, departed, the dearly departed, expired, and other euphemisms. We just don't use the D word. Yet the death of someone we love, or anticipating their death, or our own, and the grief that follows are some of the most tender places in life. Feelings pour in and the door to our hearts become round and open for all possibilities. It's one of the most vulnerable places to be. We feel helpless. The emotions can be intense, and this is an opportunity where we learn about truth and love if we can be with what is. Probably like many of you here, my family didn't talk about death growing up. No one was even comfortable saying the word. We thought if we said the word, we might somehow make it happen. You know that one? One of my earliest experiences was in 1964 when my little brother Joey died. He was 8 years old at the time. It started with a tumor on his kidney, and this particular type of cancer then spreads to the lungs. More than 50 years ago, there were no hospice. There wasn't nowhere really to go to talk about this. It was even before Kubler-Ross wrote her first book on death and dying. So Joey died at the hospital. The next time I saw him was at the mortuary. And I remember the funeral motorcade and the black clothes and the cemetery with rows of headstones. And I remember somebody telling my mother, "Just put it behind. Move on." She was 8 months pregnant with my youngest brother. No one talked about this in my family. Although many things have changed in more than a half of a century, people still aren't comfortable talking about death. There's still silence and isolation around illness, death, dying, and grief. You know, sometimes people want to talk about this. I get this a lot with the people who come into hospice to see me. But they worry that somebody will be upset or afraid or sad, or they'll be seen as negative. Maybe you heard, let's talk about something more pleasant, or don't be so negative. You know, a number of years ago, I had a client that I'll call Jane, whose mother was dying. She wanted to talk about the dying with her mother, but her sisters were against it. I encouraged her to do this, but her sisters were against it because their mother didn't know she was dying, and they didn't want her to be afraid if she found out. Well, the mother died. And at the funeral, Jane talked to the caregiver, who said that she and mother often talked about the dying, but mother didn't tell the daughters because they didn't know and would be sad if they knew. So it turned out that mother and the caregiver had intimate conversations, but mother and daughters never did. This kind of breaks my heart here. There's so many missed opportunities for connection and intimacy, forgiveness, gratitude, and loving relationships. A lot of possibilities. But people often end up feeling alone in their experience of death and grief. You know, early in life, we get a lot of messages about this. If you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about. You know that one. Or go to your room until you can come out with a smile on your face. You know, I just recently heard stories about kids when they cried got locked in the dark cellars. You know, boys might be called sissies. For a few minutes, I'd like you to think about some of the messages from the earliest loss you can remember, whether it was a person or a pet, it doesn't really matter. Things you were told growing up or things you witnessed. What were the messages you got about death and grief? Did you go to funerals or were you excluded? How did people around you respond to the loss? Did someone comfort you or support you? Perhaps someone said, oh, come here, tell me all about it. Some might have heard, get tough, be strong, or even abject silence, which for me is the worst. So there's no right or wrong way of what comes up. This is an exploration with open curiosity. Nothing to fix. So just for a moment, just think about some of the earliest, maybe your earliest memory of loss. And through these early experiences, we develop a relationship with grief and death. The messages color how we respond to it today. Do you get overwhelmed with someone's grief? Do you avoid funerals? Or people who have had a significant loss? Or have people avoided you when you had a loss? From the earliest days, we learn to ward off, and distract ourselves from loss and grief and other kinds of emotions and suffering in so many ways. We watch TV, get lost in the internet or the iPhone nowadays, drugs, alcohol. It's endless how we can avoid what's really going on. Often people say, I just stay busy, just keep going. And then it hits hard in the wee hours between dusk and dawn, when we naturally slow down. St. John of the Cross said, I saw a river over which every soul must pass to reach the kingdom of heaven. The name of the river is suffering. And then I saw a boat which carried souls across the river, and the name of that boat was love. What we are as human beings can suffer, and what suffers loves. And love can live its suffering again, endure loss again, and still love. Our hearts are the only containers spacious enough to hold the suffering and also the unbearable joy of grace. Our hearts are much larger than we imagine. Connection among us is the only thing I can envision that can begin to fill the huge gap when those we love die. In Howard's End, E.M. Forrester wrote, "Only connect and human love will be at its height. Let us live in fragments no more." And there's a little sheet in your handout. You don't have to look now, but it's called Heart Facts. And one of them that I found very interesting is when they put heart cells, different heart cells, in a Petri dish, they start beating in unison. When they put brain cells in the Petri dish, they fall away and die. But the heart cells beat in unison. You know, I can tell you about death and grief, give a few tools, but can we be in that tender place with ourselves and each other? This is where the real work begins. And this is one of my visions, that natural communities can begin to learn about these things and really take care of each other in these difficult times. Not everyone can come to Hospice of Santa Barbara. There's too many people and we're all moving along the same line. But if natural communities could really come together and support each other in illness and death and dying and grief, I think the world will automatically change. So the main learning comes from the full expression of grief. Or as Carl Jung put it, allow the space to suffer the suffering that has always needed to suffer. And we can do it bit by bit. So what is grief anyway? First and foremost, it's a matter of the heart. It's hard to think our way through it, those brain cells that die in the Petri dish. Over the years, I've come to see it as a pilgrimage. It's a sacred journey going through grief, going toward the end of our lives. We move from the head to the heart. It seems like a short distance, but that's a long distance going from the head to the heart. And grief can be powerful. And even though most of us know that experience of grief, sometimes we think of it only as sadness. In 1969, Kubler-Ross, you probably all have read this book, defined some nice stages: denial, anger, depression, bargaining, and finally acceptance. It seems so easy, right? You just... But in reality, it's a jungle of emotions. It's not linear, nor does it follow a nice, neat set of stages. It can involve a lot of feelings and sometimes all at once in utter confusion. Okay. Whoops, went too far. In A Grief Observed, C.S. Lewis wrote about the death of his wife in his memoir. Has anyone ever read that? A Grief Observed? Okay. He wrote, "No one ever told me that grief felt so like fear." He also mentions being confused, restless, ashamed. So it's more than sadness. It can involve fear, anger, guilt, shame, anxiety, wrenching regrets, helplessness, loneliness, yearning, relief, and more. And sometimes they happen all at once. It can be messy. And John, what's the name of that book, John? Grief is a Mess. It's a nice little book. I put it in there so I wouldn't lose it. But it's a nice little book and it explains the process really nicely. It can be a mess. We cycle through different feelings over and over or all at once. And these are normal reactions. One of the things that I've seen over the years that complicates grief the most, and even dying, I've seen people go through this with dying, is judgment. We add judgment to our experience. I should be over this. No one else is taking it as hard as I am. What's wrong with me that I'm taking it so hard? Have you ever noticed that people always are apologizing for their grief? We don't say, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm feeling so happy today. I don't know what's come over me. Please forgive me. But we do that with grief. So I don't really look at emotions as negative or positive. Grief is not negative. It's not positive. It just is. This is where our heart goes when we lose someone we love. We need to grieve. We need to grieve. So everybody has gotten a packet, and I put a lot of things in here so you don't have to take notes unless you want to. And I've included some helpful phrases, comparing them to less helpful phrases. So people often say, be strong, you'll get through this. Versus, I can only imagine how you coped with all of this. So the less helpful phrases can sound like judgment. This is all for you to take home. So the message is grief is somehow not okay. Somehow it's not okay. And this is one of the things that I get most when people come into the office, that, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, somehow it's not okay. So one of the big things is normalizing the whole experience they're going through. I've also included some grief. Maybe I'll take this one. Grief expectations. And the first one is grief is going to take longer than most people think. And it involves a wide variety of feelings, like we mentioned, including anger and guilt. You have trouble concentrating, thinking, sleeping. These are all normal reactions. And there's a whole list of things that are in your packet. Sometimes it even feels like you're going crazy. The feelings can be so intense. People often ask me that, am I going crazy? It's like, no, you're deep in grief. It's not easy to bear witness to intense grief. We move between the other person's feelings and our own. And this isn't a bad thing. We all do this. We're empathic creatures. But if we're going to support each other in loss, it's important to get to know our own losses. When I sit with someone in grief, my own feelings do come up. Often I feel tears in my eyes when somebody has lost their child. And it's easy to get mixed up between my own and the other person's feelings when I haven't addressed my own. If I can't tolerate it in myself, I can't tolerate it in another. The bottom line, to be with others in grief, we need to be aware of our own grief. All the feelings, the senses, the thoughts. And we're influenced by these early messages. And this colors how we view death and grief today. And there's no shortcuts around this. The more I'm aware of my own grief and all that it involves, the more I'll be present for others. We can't save them from their pain. We can't save them from their death. But we can walk with them in it. So how can we help? Allow the person to cry. Recognize they may have to talk about it again and again and again. One of the things people tell me is, you know, I'm going to wear out my friends. I keep talking about the same thing. But people need to go over and over this until they come somehow to terms with it. Sometimes doing concrete rituals can be helpful. Writing. We have Perry here who does a wonderful poetry group. And people find that so helpful, writing. Or people plant trees or put a bench up in the memory of the person. Light a candle on special days. And there's a whole list of things that are in your packet. Most important thing is to listen. Really listen with your whole being, mind, heart, body.
Okay, we'll go to the next one.
If there's one thing a person needs from another, it's to be heard and listened to for who you are. Not for who I need you to be. Just for who you are. And we don't need to move too quickly to pass the tissues. Often, you know, there's this gesture here. Here's a tissue, which may give the message that, you know, wipe it away. So we don't need to fix or interfere when someone's crying. Just let it be. So in your packet, there's another thing. It's called companioning. And this is not about assessing, analyzing, fixing, resolving another one's grief, but creating a safe place. And this safe place is a compassionate heart. It's an open heart that allows you to be present for the other person's pain without interfering or interjecting your own stuff in it. It's about being present, about going into the wilderness of the soul with another person. Can we do this? Rather than thinking you're responsible for helping them get out of this and fix it and make it better. There's no way really to make grief better unless you could bring the person back. It's just a matter of going along that journey with them until they find their own way. About listening with the heart rather than analyzing. Again, going back into the heart rather than the head. And bearing witness to the struggles rather than judging. Walking alongside rather than trying to lead them out. So this is, I find this very interesting. It's something I came across more recently. And there's a more extended list in your packet. Anyone can do this. But part of the requirement to do it is to know the terrain of your own emotions. So you don't get lost somehow in the story. So being with grief, whether it's my sister's child who died, my client's husband, my simple undivided presence is all that's needed. You don't have to be or do anything. Sometimes we feel so helpless because we want to do something. We want to fix something. And to sit there and be with it is often quite difficult. Listen. Give space. Ask appropriate questions that allow them to be with whatever it is they need to be with. You know, over the years, I've learned to trust the grief process, and I find it trustworthy. It slows us down and allows us to see things in a new way. This is a good thing that it slows us down. Often in life, we're moving in the fast lane. We're running around in the fast lane. But nature, if you look at nature, it's slow to medium. It's slow to medium, and we're just speeding along. It's something that, every time I do a group, something that comes up. Everyone just keeps going, they just keep going, and I feel like time has changed, and I'm moving at a slower pace. This is a good thing. We probably all need to move at a slower pace, in a slower place. So the only requirement is self-awareness and an open heart. Self-awareness and an open heart. And that's knowing the terrain of our own emotional world. Sure.
Take the opportunity to ask a question and also use the floor mic. I was fascinated by what you just said, Suzanne, about time slowing down, being a different kind of time. There's an expression that in Greek I heard that there was two different words for time, kairos and chronos. Has that ever come into your discussions?
No, it hasn't, but I like that.
It's
and
interesting, isn't it?
I need a pen to write that down, or maybe you can write it down.
Well, what I wanted to suggest is that this is also people in biblical studies use these terms. The chronos, it has the word chronometer in it. It's wristwatch time. It's the kind of thing that you asked me about just before. Yeah. Kairos is a spiritual time. It's God's time. And I think it might help if we just think that, you know, there are two different kinds of time. And if you're going on Kairos, you're going to be better served than Chronos at this time of life, maybe.
I love that. I want to get those written out, those words, because how do you spell those?
Kairos is Kairos.
Kairos.
And Chronos is Chronos. And that's the one that dogs us all the time, the chronometer time.
Yeah, it's always a puzzle to me, and this helps explain it. It's always a puzzle to me, after a death, it's like time seems to expand and contract, and it doesn't have any linear pattern to it. You know, for a moment I'd like to say a little bit about how I've come to work with grief over the years. And this didn't happen all at once. And there's really two parts to this. Early grief, when someone's loss is fresh, and grief after reality begins to set in. And soon after a loss, all we really need to do is sit quietly and listen. Perhaps ask a few questions. Something simple. What was she like? Tell me about your father or daughter or sister. What did your question serve? Use the person's own language and keep it about them. And in the packet, I've had some kind of rules of thumb around this. You know, don't make it about you. Don't turn it around and make it about you. Be real. Don't try to fake it or pretend you know an experience that you haven't had from the inside out. I hear people say, oh, I know just what it's like that you lost your daughter. I lost my dog. I don't want to underestimate the loss of a pet. That can be a very important loss. But if you say this to a mother or father who just lost their child, I can guarantee it's not going to go over very well. And so if I've never had the loss of a child, and I say, oh, I understand. Or if somebody says they're afraid, and I say, I understand, they'll know I'm just guessing unless I have know this experience intimately in my own heart, in my own body. What does it feel like from the inside out? If I don't know this, they'll detect my phoniness and I'll lose trustworthiness. I won't be trustworthy anymore. So get to know these states in yourself. Sadness, fear, helplessness. That's a big one during loss. Is helplessness is probably one of the hardest feelings for people. There's nothing they can do about the situation. You know, as well as getting to know the love and joy. They're all part of the human condition. It's the heart's journey. You know, it's hard to be with somebody, sitting with somebody in grief if we're trying to push down our own. When we're pushing down our own, that's where we try to fix the other person's grief. So if you find yourself trying to fix someone's grief or shut it down, that's a clue that your own needs attention. Yeah, we can't fix it. And most of us think of ourselves as competent. We can fix all kinds of things. You know, cars and toasters. But we can't fix people. So if something keeps coming up, pay attention. It tells us the areas where we still have more work to do. And it'll keep coming up till we address it. So you don't have to do anything. Just show up and be present. And the more you're aware of your own inner terrain, the more present you'll be able to be. Simple, non-judgmental awareness is all that's needed. And often we don't know what to say. Somebody has had a tragic loss and we don't know what to say. You can just say that. I don't know what to say. So one simple lesson, if someone dies or is grieving, sit down and stay calm. Death and grief are not emergencies. Now, if somebody falls down and breaks a bone or splits their head open, well, that's an emergency. Then you need to call 911 or get them to the ER. But death is not an emergency. One calm presence is all that's needed. That's all a family may need, is one calm presence in the room. So the second part of how I've come to work with death and grief as people begin to move through the grief is a little different. In the past, people talked about importance of saying goodbye, putting the person behind. And I'm not thinking this way so much anymore. Sure, we need some kind of closure, forgiveness, gratitude, I love yous, and so on. But rather than saying goodbye and putting the person behind, these days I focus more on the gifts. And over the years I've seen how much we miss by not attending to this. And the poet Rilke, somebody mentioned the poet Rilke, a line about impermanence. I don't remember who that was. He's a wonderful poet. He said, love and death are the great gifts that are given to us. Mostly they're passed on unopened. Love and death are the great gifts that are given to us. Mostly they're passed on unopened. And what I've seen over the years working with thousands of people in my own life and my own personal deaths is that no one leaves this earth without leaving something behind. And it's our job to open the package if we wish. The ones who have gone before us paved the path for us, as we will pave the path for those we leave behind. How do we honor those lives that mattered? What they meant to us? How do we remember them? I'm not a big believer of just forgetting them and never mentioning the name again. One thing I do is I have photos of those who died on my dresser, and I look at them, I think about them. I give gratitude for them having been in my life. Sometimes I'll rearrange them. Sometimes I see a pattern. Oh, these people just love me so much. These people were really good in business. So, you know, it's like a deck of cards. I move them around a little bit sometimes. And I ask myself, what are the qualities that I admired in them? What do I recognize about them? How can I incorporate these into my own life and continue to use these qualities in the world? They will not be forgotten. Even generations I've never met, my great-grandparents, my husband's family murdered in the Holocaust, they're with me. They're not going to be forgotten. So what I'm encouraging you to do is look for the precious stones along the way. They were left there for us to gather. I encourage you to open the gifts. Don't let them go by unopened, because we're going to pass these on to the next generation and be remembered as we remember those who have gone before us. Or not. And we can model this for the younger generations. So the gifts come with healing. At first, it's simple presence and listening. If you start talking about the gifts too early, they're going to look at you like you're crazy. All I feel is pain. There's nothing good in this. Nothing good can ever come out of this. But it's surprising to see what good can come out of this and how people are transformed from the grief process. I had one person in a group I do for people who lose their adult children. And one day she was talking and she said, she started weeping and she said, I wish my child could have seen me how I am now, that I have so much more compassion than I had before. And that made her sad, thinking that her child could not see how she had been changed by this process. So don't let them go by unopened. The gifts come with the healing. At first, it's presence and listening, and as people begin to heal, I work with them to discover the gifts that their loved ones left behind. You know, through simple questions. It's very simple, nothing complicated. Tell me what your sister was like. What did you love so much about her? What are you grateful for? And as we ourselves move closer to death, there are two essential questions. Am I loved? Did I love well? Am I loved? Did I love well? So conversations around death and grief have the potential to open our hearts, huge potential, to make room for gratitude and forgiveness and I love yous. So after the break, what I'd like to do is a little exercise around the gifts. I won't do that before because there won't be enough time here. Mark Twain had a saying, "The truth will set you free, but first it'll make you uncomfortable." And this is the threshold where I see resilience coming in. We increase this threshold by moving toward the subject, exploring death and grief with open hearts. Have conversations with those who matter, knowing they won't be here forever. And we don't know when or how or where, you know, this will happen. But it will happen. I can guarantee 100% it'll happen. I have absolutely no doubt. This body is going to leave the earth. So in the packet, I've included things that I thought would be useful to you, stages of grief, facts about the heart, expectations, and this is all for you to take and look at or not, dealing with loss, helpful hints for when somebody is in grief, some rules of thumb, and the companioning model I mentioned briefly here, and then a couple little articles. And then, finally, I put an at-home assignment. I like to give homework assignments, so that's a little loss history chart for you to do on your own or with your partners or children or friends. So as Dr. Rachel Naomi Remen says, and actually there's somebody in this room who first introduced me to her work, Nina, and I love her work. Grieving is not about forgetting. Grieving allows us to heal and to remember with love rather than pain. And I use that kind of as a thermometer. Am I remembering with pain or am I remembering with love? If you're remembering with pain, okay, well, this is good. It's telling you you have more work to do. And that's okay. It doesn't matter. No judgment around grief and loss and death and dying. So I'll just end this part with a poem. You probably know it, many of you, The Well of Grief, David White. Those who will not slip beneath the still surface on the well of grief, turning down to its black water, to the place that we cannot breathe, we'll never know the source from which we drink, the secret water cold and clear, nor find in the darkness the small gold coins thrown by those who wish for something else. Those who will not slip beneath the still surface on the well of grief, turning down to its black water, to the place that we cannot breathe, we'll never know the source from which we drink the secret water cold and clear, nor find in the darkness the small gold coins thrown by those who wished for something else. So I think we're going to take a break now. And after the break, I'd like to do a little exercise and then open it up for discussion. How does that sound? Okay, we'll come back at 11:15.